All right, well, today we are going to follow our theme that we've started for our week. And maybe you're not familiar with what we do here. We will have a morning Bible study that's built around a theme. What's today's theme, church? Sin. Okay, so today's theme was sin. And we're talking about how we can deal with sin. And so our music is kind of geared around understanding Christ and how sin is forgiven. Our scripture reading is the same. And here today, we're going to address that same topic. We have devotional guides that go Monday through Sunday that we'd be glad to put in your hands here today. And it's just a devotion every day of the week on sin and how to deal with the sin, how to be somebody who's accountable for their sin, all sorts of devotions there that you can work through this week. So that's where we're walking this week. We don't do this every week. This is our intended practice. But sometimes God prods our hearts to do something different, and so we go different directions. And we're okay with that, right? I'm okay with that, right? Okay, I'm okay with that. So if he leads me differently, then that's just how it goes. So, I love that. So anyway, we're going to pursue sin here today. And we're not going to pursue sin. We're going to talk about sin here today. You all looked at sin this morning from the life of a gentleman named Achan. And he kind of just didn't obey fully, right? He did pursue sin. And ultimately, Achan was accountable to God for what he did, but not just himself. You saw that his actions had far-reaching effects on his family, as they all paid the price also for his sin. And so we see there that God takes serious sin. We're going to see here today that we should do the same also. But we're going to be in the New Testament, okay? We're going to be in John chapter 8. So if you have a Bible, you can go ahead and turn there. If you don't have a Bible, you can follow along in the bulletin, the little white bulletin. It's in there, and it's also on the wall today to help us follow along together. So we'll be there in just a few minutes. But before we get there, I always like to talk a little bit. Let's kind of preface what we're doing. So the title of the message today is called Don't Give Up, Get Up. Okay, have you ever felt like giving up? All right, so I think we all understand what it means to, like, I'm just tired of this. I can't do it anymore. It's too hard for me. And so sometimes when we're dealing with sin, it's easier for you and I just to give up. I can't live this Christian life than it is to have that get up within our spirit that says, yes, I can. And so this morning we're going to work through some ways that I believe we give up and ultimately end at the place where we can get up. But we'll be there in just a few minutes. So typically when you think about giving up, when I think about giving up, it's usually when things get hard, right? I mean, nobody gives up on their marriage when it's going great. Nobody gives up on their business when they're making good money and it's thriving. Nobody gives up on their college education when they're enjoying college and they're doing well at it. We tend to give up when it gets hard and it's not fun anymore and it seems like there's no hope within it. I think about sports teams. Sometimes you'll see a team that gets demoralized because they're just getting beat so bad. You ever seen that before? And the coach is really trying to prod them on at the end, and they're getting beat by 50 points. It's like, what's the purpose? There's no hope. We're not coming back. So sometimes we see people just give up. Well, I don't think that we are strangers to giving up as Christians. But I hope this morning we're also not strangers to getting up either. So we're going to spend our time together trying to look at a few ways that we give up, and some of these may be maybe ways you hadn't thought about before, but they're definitely in the text in John 8, and we're also going to see in the text how we can get up. One thing I want to say to you today, and maybe this will be a theme that you'll leave with, is this. No failure needs to be final. And that's probably not new to you, but it's the truth. No failure in your life needs to have the final say-so over who you are, how you're going to live, who you can become. Right? No failure needs to be final. We have the opportunity to get up. So let's go here. John chapter 8. We're going to start in verse 2 and go through verse 11. But here's what's going on. Jesus has been in the temple and he's been teaching some people and they're trying to figure out who this guy is. He said he's the Son of God. John said, here comes the Lamb of God who will take away the sins of the world. And so they're trying to figure out, who is this guy? Who is he really? So people are listening. Some say that he's Christ and they believe. Some people say, well, he's demon-possessed. Other people say he's a good teacher. Some people are just on the fence. They're just trying to figure out who he is. And yet some people are trying to snuff him out. They think he's a blasphemer, and so we're going to get rid of this guy. We don't have any need for Jesus. And so let's find him here once again in the temple. He's going to be teaching, and he has an encounter with some Pharisees and scribes. John chapter 8, beginning in verse 2. Now, early in the morning, he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery in the very act. Now, Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what do you say?" This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger, as though he did not hear. And so when they continued asking him, he raised up and said to them, "He who is without sin among you, let him throw a stone at her first." And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest even to the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. And when Jesus had raised himself up and saw no one but the woman, he said to her, "Woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said to her, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." Go and sin no more. And so here it is this morning. I'm going to look into a few different ways. We want to work together a few different ways of how we can sometimes give up and ultimately want to come to the place where we can get up. So initially, let's start with our first point today, if you're following along in your bulletin. The first thing is this: when we give up, we give up when we conceal our sin. Okay? I give up, you give up when I conceal my sin. When you conceal your sin, you give up. And really, church, I believe this is one of the most prominent ways that we give up. But it's one of those ways that kind of flies under the radar. It's one of those things that we probably don't even think about. It often goes unnoticed. So to conceal my sin means that I act like it doesn't even exist. So I've sinned, but I'm not going to acknowledge that I have sinned. So we don't deal with it. We don't confess it. We don't own up to it. And ultimately, we just simply conceal it. You ever done that? You ever found yourself done something you shouldn't do, and yet you try to go on like everything's okay? So I come to church today, and I got my Sunday best on or whatever, and I'm singing songs, and I'm giving money, and I'm hugging people, and I'm smiling, and yet there's sin in my life. Right? You ever been there? Okay, I think we probably all walk through the doors in similar fashion. And so that's what we're talking about when I'm talking about concealing our sin. And here's the problem with that. It's one of those things where I don't even realize that I've given up. I don't even realize that I've given up. I'm just kind of going through the motions. I think that I'm loving the Lord. I think that I'm honoring the Lord, and yet there's sin in my heart that I haven't dealt with. What happens when I don't deal with my sin? Initially, the Holy Spirit tries to convict me. Is that to hurt me? Is his goal to harm me or belittle me or embarrass me? No, he's trying to draw me, saying, "Listen, Corey, the way that you're living is not beneficial for you. It's not honoring your God. So we need to deal with this." Well, when I tell the Spirit no, and I get my mind wrapped up in other things so I don't think about my sin, and I get my life committed to other things so I don't think about my sin, then I quench that Spirit within me. And so he's no longer at work. And so I'm going around, think I'm living like the good Christian, when deep within my heart there is concealed sin. There is unconfessed sin. There is sin that I do not want to acknowledge. And that's a big deal. And Jesus knew that, and that's why he speaks to the Pharisees and the scribes. So let's go back here to verse 9. John chapter 8, verse 9. All right, Jesus has just said to them, if you're without sin, throw. Verse 9 begins, "At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there." So here's the thing. Was there sin in their life? Absolutely. Absolutely, there was sin in their life. Now, when you look at the text here, and you know I use helps a lot of time, Greek experts to help me. When you look in this, in the original language, when Jesus says to these people, any of you not sinned? He's not saying, you've never sinned. What he's saying is, have you not committed a similar sin? So have you not committed the act of adultery? But it's not even in the sense of physical so much as it is in the spiritual. Have you not been adulterous towards me? Had they been? We know they had been because Jesus often refers to them as the adulterous generation. So had they sinned? Absolutely, they had sinned, and yet they were living just like everything was okay. They were going on. Didn't the Pharisees think they had the market on living for God? They thought they were the best in the block. Nobody was better than them. And yet they're nothing. They had given up and didn't even know it because they had sin within themselves that they wouldn't deal with. And maybe you find yourself in that type of situation today. I don't know. That's kind of a scary place to be sinning, and to be willing to reject the Spirit's conviction. So I can just go on living, acting like everything's okay. I know it's difficult to confess your sin. It means I've got to humble myself. It means I've got to acknowledge that I have sinned. And usually it means I've got to go reconcile with somebody here, and I definitely have to reconcile with my God. So I know it's not easy. I know it's easier just to act like, well, I didn't really do that. I didn't think that. I didn't mean to say that, even though it came out that way. And just go on like, well, since I didn't mean to, it's okay. And yet what we'll find is we're just like these Pharisees, thinking that we're walking in, God's receiving worship from us that's pleasing. And yet all along, he's looking past the exterior to the heart, and he sees something there that is unpleasant. Sometimes we just don't want to deal with our sin. So you know what we do? Have you ever given your sin a different name? I don't want to call it sin. I want to say you needed to know. So, okay, maybe it was gossip, but you really just needed to know. So I'm not going to call it sin. I just call it something else. Or in that same context, I'll say something, and maybe I'll say, well, let's just pray for them. You know, what I'm doing, I'm revealing my heart, right? And I'm trying to call it by another name, because if I don't call it sin, it means I'm not accountable. If I don't call it sin, I don't have to deal with it. And so I'll call it something entirely different so that I can go on my little merry Christian life thinking that everything is okay. The reality is, church, an unwillingness to call sin, sin creates more problems. It's really not that complicated. Is it? It really isn't. Life isn't. God created everything and said it's good. And he said, you got a will and follow me. And we said no. And we sinned. And we're still sinning. And God says, well, I'm going to provide the way for you to have your sin taken care of. Trust in me. Repent of your sin. Confess. Deal with it. And I'll restore you. I'll forgive you. We'll be reconciled. It's not difficult. And yet we muddy the water. We make all kinds of trouble when we don't want to call sin, sin. And so let's think through this, because I don't know, I didn't grow up in some of your generations. I know the generation that I'm raising my family in, training my family in. And some of our culture is kind of saying that this is okay. Let's don't call sin, sin. Let's give it another name. That way we conceal it, we can conceal it, and we don't have to deal with it. Here's a few things right now, even in our own state. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, and I don't want to get you all hoopla on different kinds of things here, but here's some things that we're dealing with in our own state. For example, right, we don't want to call sin sin, and so we're going to call it a woman's right. Now, I don't mean to offend any of you women here today, no disrespect. I just want to be honest with you and say, it's not your right. And it's unfortunate that women bear the burden of abortion, because behind that woman is who? It's usually the man. It takes two to tango, and it's usually that gentleman who's saying, you know what, this isn't a good time, or we need to just make this go away, and he's trying to pressure her often to do that very thing of taking that child's life. But we don't want to call it abortion, we don't want to call it murder, so we've given it a pretty name so we don't have to deal with the sin, so we call it woman's rights. Listen, it's no more a woman's right to take that child's life than it is for me to take your life today. Do I have the right to take your life? Do you have the right to take mine? No, because it's what? It's sin. It's murder. But we don't want to call it sin. That's one thing right now that's being dealt with in our legislation, in our state government. Another thing right now that's going on within our own state government, and maybe you pay attention to these things or maybe you don't. But we have people, once again, they don't want to call sin, sin, so we're going to call it same-sex marriage and kind of make it pretty, right? Because that's what it's about. Marriage is about, I love you and you love me and I'm committed to you and you're committed to me, and that's all that marriage is really about. And so we can call it marriage. Listen, you can't get simple like that, all right? So, for example, let's do this. All right, here we go. I've got a few props today. After church today, this is like a good time of year. Basketball's going on, but so are football, right? Football playoffs are going on. Maybe you watched the games yesterday. So let's go play some football after church today. Anybody going with me? All right, so we're going to go play football. You and me, all right? Me and Bill are going to go play. Anybody else want to go play some football? Come on, people. Anybody come watch us play football? So some of you are going to come watch, okay? So we're going to go play football. And some of you are looking at me like I'm crazy. What's the problem with what I've got in playing the game? I've got the wrong ball. But hey, it doesn't really matter, right? It's all you need is a ball, and then you can call it whatever game you want to call it. Is that true? No, there's a reason they call it football. And there's a reason they call it marriage. It's not two people who love each other. It's a man and woman who love each other, who are committed to each other. And God's included in this thing. He's the one who seals the deal. So the idea of same-sex marriage, that's crazy. That could never be true because marriage could never be between two people of the same sex. Does that make sense? But we don't want to deal with the sin, and so we're going to pretty it up, and we've got civil unions, or we want to try to do this same-sex marriage, and yet we don't want to deal with homosexuality as a sin. Here again, listen, we can get on board with these, right? Abortion, homosexuality, church talks about those types of things, but those types of sins are no different than my gossip or yours. Okay, you might look at a guy or a woman and go, ooh, I can't believe they would live that way. That's just despicable. Listen, God hates your sinfulness of gossip or my sinfulness of laziness as much as he hates those type of sins. It's no different. So when I said earlier, I don't want to get you all rah, 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 because for every one of us, it's the same thing. So we've got women's rights and we've got civil rights. Equality for everybody. If I want to marry somebody, I should be able to marry them and call it marriage. The reality is I cannot define things that God has defined. There's another one right now that's going on in our legislation, and maybe you're probably more aware of this one than any of these other two, but it's concerning gun laws, right? With the things, with the tragedy that took place in Connecticut, it makes sense that this is in the forefront of our mind. Our state right now is working to write stricter or what they would call better gun laws because they think laws are what is needed. Laws are going to cure the problem. Can I just tell you that's not the answer? I don't know what your opinion is on guns, and I'm not trying to get into all that. I can talk to you about my opinion and your opinion later. That's not what this platform is for. But laws for guns are not the answer. Think about it for a minute. I would say, within the context of this room, we could probably gather 50 guns quickly. That would just be my guess, but I think we're probably somewhere close to that number, 40 or 50 guns. So if we had all those here today on display on the stage, is there anything evil about those guns? No. Is that gun laying there going to hurt somebody? No. No, that gun finds itself being used as a dangerous weapon when it gets in the hand of somebody who has a sinful heart. Make sense? And yet we think it's about gun rights. It's not about gun rights. It's not about civil rights. It's not about the right for a woman. But here's a thought. If we're so interested in going after instruments that carry out needless murder, then why don't we start pursuing those who commit abortions? Really? In this country, it's 1 to 100, roughly. For every one murder that's committed in this country, there are 100 abortions. Now, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, maybe initially, but you add that over 365 days, you get around 12,000 murders in this country, homicides with a gun, but we have 1.2 million abortions. But we won't talk about that because that's sin and we don't want to deal with our sin. Here's the reality. New laws aren't needed at all. New hearts are needed, right? That's what we need to be addressing. It's the sin. It's not the inanimate object. It's the sin. It's not the right. See, rights are not our problem. Wrongs are. But we don't want to talk about our wrongs. We want to claim our rights. But the reality is we have a sin problem. So to try to deal with any one of these rites without going to the heart is like dealing with the symptoms of a disease rather than going to the disease itself. So you and I today may have a disease within us that's seeking to take life from us. And it's given me a headache, so the doctor's going to give me some medicine to take care of my headaches. You know how this song goes. But the medicine that works on my headache is also going to give me an upset stomach. So it's going to take care of my headache, but I'm going to give you a second medication to cure your nausea. Right? Well, that's worked for a little bit, but that's it just keeps me up at night. It makes me restless. Well, here's another medication to help you sleep, but you're going to sleep better, but we're going to raise your blood pressure, which means you're going to need to go exercise, but not too much. And so you've got all this stuff working for you and against you. Right? We're treating all the symptoms when all along we should be addressing the heart of the problem. What's the disease? Cure the disease, not the symptoms. And it's the same way with the sin in our lives. Don't cover up your guilt. Don't push away the conviction of the Spirit. Deal with your sin. Call it what it is. Call it what God calls it, rather than trying to conceal it. The whole point I'm trying to make here initially is this. Sin by any other name leads us to trouble. Sin by any other name leads us to trouble. First of all, it's going to weaken my desire and my ability to resist it. So when I don't call my sin sin, I call it something that sounds kind of pleasant and helpful, then I'm more willing to engage in it because it's not sinful. And so it weakens my ability to resist it. It weakens my desire to resist it. When I call sin any other name, it underestimates what it is that brings harm to me. And so I'm not looking at it as something that's hurtful to me. I'm looking at it more as something that may be helpful for me. Is any sin good for me? No. And there's not any sin that's good for you either. And yet when I call it by a different name, it underestimates its harmfulness. But the main thing it does is that it minimizes God's hatred towards it. When I'm willing to engage in something because I don't think God hates it, then I think it's really not that big of a deal. But as a believer, as a Christian, when I see that God hates it, you know what should be in my heart? Hate. I don't hate that person. I hate that act. Right? I hate more and more the God of this age who is wrecking people's lives. It's all right to hate there. So sin by any other name causes problems. So here's the point. Don't conceal it. Deal with it. The Pharisees concealed it, and it led to all sorts of problems. It's going to lead us to our next way of giving up here, I believe, here this morning. So let's go secondly here today. We give up not only when we conceal it, but we give up when we are more concerned with other people's sins than we are our own sins. Okay? So there's the progression. The Pharisees weren't looking at their sins, right? I concealed those. I'm right before God. It's you. You're the one who's got issues. You're the one who's got problems. You're the one that we need to bring before the temple courts. You're the one that we need to judge and make a fair, or so we would believe, a fair assessment of. So that's what's going on with these Pharisees and scribes. They concealed their sin, but it wasn't enough to think that there was no sin in their life. They kept on looking at other people. It's you're the problem. You're the one who's got sin in your life. Let's talk about you here for a little bit. So what do? They go out and they find a man and a woman who are engaged in the act of adultery. Okay? Now here again, ladies, I'm with you. Who is brought into the temple court? The woman. Who is guilty of the act of adultery? The woman and the man. Where's the man in this story? Right? You're like, that's right. Where is that man? These people weren't interested in sin. If they cared about the sin of the person, they would have brought the man in. What are they concerned about? They're trying to trick Jesus. They're trying to play a little game here with Jesus. And so they go out and find this man and woman caught in the act. Verses 4 and 5. Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. They're addressing Jesus. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Now what do you say? Okay? So they're trying to trick him. If Jesus says, don't stone her, then they say, ah, he's a blasphemer because he doesn't uphold the law. But if he says stoner, then they'll say, ah, here's the guy who says it's okay for us to murder somebody. And if you'll go on and read John, you'll see they didn't even have the right to crucify Jesus, right? That's why they had to take him to somebody else so they could murder him, because the Jews simply didn't have the power to do that. Now, here's the reality. Sin is sin is sin. True? Across the board, sin is sin. Is adultery wrong? Yes, it is. Spiritual adultery, adultery in my mind, adultery in my heart, or the physical act of it, in every case, it's wrong. However, the Pharisees' motivation here, again, was not the sin. It was they wanted to be right, really. They wanted to trap Jesus, getting him to answer in a way that would be difficult. And that's what we find going on here. Okay? What's Jesus doing when they ask the question? This is awesome. He's drawing on the ground. What do you do to your kids when you're trying to talk to them and they're just like, they're not even listening? Do, 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 do. Go clean your room. Right? Eat your... So you think you've got them. And that's exactly what's going on here. These Pharisees are pressing Jesus. Come on, where's your answer? We've got him. We're going to expose him in front of the temple. Everybody's going to witness this. Push him, press him. And so they're pressing on, and Jesus is just doodling in the sand. I don't know what he's doing. I mean, some people think it's super spiritual. I don't know, maybe it was. Some people think he was writing out all their sins in the sand, or he was writing the Ten Commandments. But who knows what he was doing? I mean, there's no idea. There's no way for us to know. He simply was not paying attention to these people. They were trying to trap him, but he simply wouldn't give in. So here's the deal. The Pharisees are painting a picture for us that is somewhat accurate. I do have a responsibility to you and your sinfulness. And you do have a responsibility to me and my acts of sin. And that's for my good. And that's for your good. And that's for our good. And that's for God's glory. Okay? Here again, we're talking about things that aren't pleasant, aren't easy, but they're definitely needful. So knowing how to lovingly confront sin in one another is a big deal. But let's look at a couple of things we can find from the heart of these people as they bring in this woman. Here's the first thing. If I'm not viewing my sin correctly, what makes me think I can look at your sin correctly? So I've got sin in my life. I'm a Pharisee. I don't want to deal with my sin. I'm going to conceal it, but you got problems. And so let's talk about your sin. Okay? Okay? No, you don't want me talking about your sin because Corey's not dealing with his sin. All right, so let's illustrate this here for a moment, if I can. You remember what Jesus taught about acknowledging your sin? Looking at other sins? All right, I'm going to try to do this and hold a mic at the same time. So here we go. I'm going to leave it here. All right, so can you see this? Here's my sin. Here's yours. That's a toothpick, by the way, if you can't see it. I can't see you, so I have no idea. So Jesus tells us in Matthew 7:3, all right, you and I, we need to deal with this plank in our own eye before I start looking at the speck in your eye. So here's what the Pharisees are doing. Just get a picture of this for a minute. Okay. Dude, you got problems, man. You are an embarrassment to Christianity. You got to deal with that. Everybody can see that. Right? That's silly, isn't it? But that's what they're doing. Maybe far too often we're doing that as well. If I'm not going to look at myself correctly, what makes me think I can begin to look at you correctly? Not going to happen. But secondly, though, this tells us something else, and this reveals the heart of the matter. Why am I looking at your sin? Why are you looking at my sin? Why did you go into a neighborhood somewhere and open a door and walk into a house you weren't welcome in and invite yourself in to catch somebody sinning? What's the motivation of my heart? What's the motivation of your heart? See, when the purpose that I'm exposing your sin is to beat you down or to make a mockery of you or to laugh at you or to put you in your place, it reveals that my heart is wrong. And what I've really done is given up living like Christ. Where do we find Jesus dragging people into the temple and saying, "Sinner"? Where do we find Jesus with sinners? He's sitting around their table. He's sharing a meal. He's not a coward. He's calling out their sin, but he's also saying, "I'm the remedy for your sin." All right? Call him Jesus because he's going to be the one to take away the sins of the world. That's what he was about. That's why he exposed sin. That's why he confronted it. And that's why the Holy Spirit works in our lives the same way today. It's not to belittle us. It's not to hurt you. It's not to expose you or make a mockery of you. It's for your good. It's for my good. It's so that we will look to the one who can remedy our sin rather than walk away. So when I begin to point out other people's sins, I need to first think about, is there a plank in my eye? And what's my heart in this matter? I shouldn't be excited when I find you sinning. The first thing I do shouldn't be jump on Facebook or jump on the telephone. You're never going to believe what I saw, what I heard. That's a bunch of junk. I need to be broken. I need to hurt. I need to feel the burden and the weight. Because God hates it. I should hate it. God knows it's not for my good and it's not for your good. So when you're looking at sins, when I'm looking at others' sins, what does my heart reveal about me? Is there compassion? Is there a desire to see that relationship reconciled? Or is it kind of, "Well, I told you so. I knew you were going to mess it up. Remember what I told you a couple months ago? See, this is why." There needs to be brokenness. There needs to be compassion. So when I don't live like that, when I don't address your sin that way, I give up living like Christ. I've just simply given up because he doesn't live like that. I can call myself Christian. I can call myself pastor. But it doesn't matter. Are you more concerned with other sins than your own? If so, then maybe you have given up living as a Christian here today. But then that leads us to a third one here. The third one is this. If we're going to give up, one surefire way is that we walk away from Jesus. If I walk away, I'm quitting. Yesterday, my youngest, Lucy, was playing basketball, and this little boy, two boys collided and hit the ground, and they wear these wristbands to identify who they're supposed to guard on the other team, same color wristbands. Well, this boy hopped up quick and took his wristbands off and handed them and went and ran to his mom because he was giving up. He had had enough. He was walking away. See, to the Pharisees, sin was a game. So we'll just conceal it. It's not a big deal. We're better than we are bad. We're doing more good than we are bad stuff. So we're okay. Don't deal with that. Listen, you got a title. People think that you should live at this level, so don't just hide that stuff. You're entitled to be inappropriate sometimes. You're entitled to indulge in selfish pleasures. Go ahead. We want to make those types of things okay, but in the Pharisees' life here, it was no different. They were playing a game with their sin. They came to confront Jesus, hoping to trap Jesus, but they lost the confrontation, right? And so what do? They walk away. The very thing they needed was standing right in front of them. Everything their heart and soul desperately needed is waiting for them right there. And they walk out of the temple. Don't you think they could have identified with the woman? Jesus didn't say, "If you've sinned, go out of the building." He said, "If you've sinned, what? Don't stone her. But stay. Let's talk about this. Let's work through this." They weren't interested in dealing with their sin. It's a scary place when I'm uninterested to deal with my sin. Because what I'm doing, church friend, I'm just walking away from what it is that I desperately need. Verse 9. Jesus had just exposed their sin. "At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Did they want forgiveness? No. You know what they wanted more than forgiveness? They wanted to be right. And I understand that in ways that I wish I didn't. How many times I've had to approach the gift of my personal sanctification in my home and say I'm sorry because I was more interested in being right than I was in confessing to you that I'm wrong, seeking your forgiveness. By the way, gentlemen, if you're married, the best gift God has given you is your wife, other than His Spirit and His Son. She is there for your personal sanctification. And you probably know that. But you're there for hers also. Nobody knows me the way Stephanie does. And she sees things in me that I don't see. And she can call that out in me. And I need her to call that out in me. I just keep praying, Lord, I want to be broken rather than right. I don't want to walk away thinking that I've won some kind of battle when really I'm just concealing sin in my heart. The Pharisees walked away from Jesus. What did the woman do? She stayed. Now, we don't know how it turns out for her. Right? She could have walked away. She could have went right back to the house, picked up where she left off. We don't know. But what we do know is that Jesus extended to her the opportunity to have her sins taken care of. He said to her what was needful for her to hear. Go and sin no more. Everything that she needed was standing or sitting, whatever the case was in that temple room, right there in front of her. All she needed to do was to look to Jesus. So here, maybe this morning you find yourself in a place you don't want to find yourself. Maybe you find yourself kind of like a Pharisee. You say, I think I've walked away a little bit. I've taken more pride in being right than I have in being nurturing, being submissive, leading, serving, being helpful. I've taken more pride in me than I have in the position and the opportunity that God has given me to serve Him. Or maybe you think of sin as a game, that it's really not that big of a deal. Is sin a big deal to God? You think giving your son to die is some kind of game strategy? No, He's telling us that it's a big deal because it took perfect, pure blood to pay the price. So it's not a game. You may be playing, but God's not. God hates it. So I want to encourage you today, if there's some kind of sin working in your life, then deal with it. Don't walk away from Jesus, but come to Him. Don't be proud, but humble yourself. You hear guys all the time talk about how they never cry or how tough they are and they don't have to admit when they're wrong. Not that they're never wrong, they just don't need to admit that. You know what a real man does? A real man humbles himself. Cry or not cry, I don't care. But a real man will humble himself, acknowledge that he's sinned, and he'll seek forgiveness. See, what you and I, church, need to be doing today is setting the standard for what it looks like to live as sinful people who are under grace. Rather than walking through a door thinking I'm perfect, although God sees me that way, I need to be able to walk in and say I am imperfect and I have sinned. And to humble myself and deal with those things. So we've talked about giving up. But let's talk about how to get up. I mean, if I give up when I conceal it, and if I give up when I'm more interested in your sin than my sin, and when I give up when I walk away from Jesus, then how do I not give up? That's what we need to work with here. How is it that I can get up? It's really just a flip-flop. So rather than concealing your sin, deal with it. Call it what it is. This is what's going on in my life, and God hates it, and I hate it also. And it's no longer going to be a part of me. And with God's help, this is out the door for me. This is not the man that I've wanted to be. This is not the woman. This is not the young person that I wanted to be. Don't conceal it. Deal with it. I had a friend who would say it like this. He'd say, you need to check yourself before you wreck yourself, fool. And he was absolutely right. You need to wake up and look in that mirror. Get past the surface. What's going on in your heart? What's going on in my mind? If there's sin there, don't conceal it. Deal with it. Call it what it is. But then get concerned about your sin. Right? These things work together. Get concerned about your sin. Don't just write it off and say, here's your speck. Deal with your plank. When's the last time you reminded yourself that your potty mouth cost the Son of God his life? Or your road rage cost the Son of God his life? Or our gossip cost the Son of God his life? Or our disobedience cost the Son of God his life? When's the last time you thought of your sin, looked at your sin the way God viewed sin? When's the last time you were broken and you just were so frustrated because sin won? And just that reminder that I needed Jesus Christ. Ask the Lord to burden you about your sin. We see that in Isaiah. Woe is you, woe is you, woe is you. And then he has this vision of the Lord, and what's he say? Woe is me. Remember Peter out fishing in the boat, and they caught nothing. They go out with Jesus, and they catch everything. And Peter says, go away from me, because I am a sinful man. These people felt the weight of their sin. They understood the blessing of the first beatitude. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Those who are willing to humble themselves and should humble themselves because they understand that they're sinners. Get concerned about your sin. But then don't treat lightly what God hates. See, here's the reality today. I'm not trying to get you to feel guilty. I don't want you to walk out of here beat down or ashamed. The reality is, come to Jesus. Don't walk away. He's not knocking at your heart to expose your sin and tell you how terrible you are. He's saying, I've got better things for you. I'm creating you into something that's more beautiful than you could ever dream. But you've got to do your part. Don't cover that sin. Don't hide that sin. Don't act like it's not a big deal, because it is. Confess that sin and leave it there. 1 John 1:9 tells us, if we confess our sins, he is faithful, he's just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from our unrighteousness. So we're getting ready to pray here, but before we do, here's what I want you to see. God's not asking anybody in the room to do better. Christianity is not a self-help course. What this is about you and I waking up every day, living every moment, submitted. Here's my life. Do with it what you will. Expose my sin. Lead me to my neighbor. Prompt my heart to give. Lead me halfway across the world. I don't care, because I'm submitted to you. Submit to Christ. Then commit to walk with him, doing the very things that he's asking you to do. Here's the reality today. The offer of forgiveness is on the table. It's there for the taking. There is the reality this morning of an authentic Christian life that is available to you. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be a Pharisee. I don't want to act like I've got it going on when inside I don't. I'm a wreck. I'm a mess. I've got sin. I want genuineness. I'm not perfect, but God's helping me become perfect. Ultimately, I will be one day when I stand before him.